Dustin, you may be the cheesiest person I've ever met in my life.
No, Am is hate, hate, horoscopes.
Hate, hate,
Welcome to New Game Plus. You're listening to a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
Nolan is my name.
And this is episode 180.
Yeah, 180.
There you go, Kenny. Always on those nice even fives and zeros. has the chance to celebrate, and you should too. 180 is worth celebrating.
That's a lot of episodes.
It's one more than 179.
Yeah.
A few weeks back, we concluded our retro gaming tournament. We haven't really talked about it much since, which is fine because we did a whole lot of talking about it for a good couple of weeks.
News coverage. But
listeners voted on 64 games. They ended up selecting Link to the Past as the ultimate champion. Japan must have been paying attention to New Game Plus.
Japan, the country?
Oh, yeah, the country, yeah. And okay. All of the people.
Right.
The nation, yeah. Because of Japan.
Japanese fans just voted on the greatest game of the era. So their eras are always different, but I believe that it coincides with the reign of the emperor. I know that sounds sci-fi or fantasy, but I think that's reality. Okay. I don't know all the terminology.
Yeah.
The new era starts May 1st with their new emperor. So this last era was from 1989 until now.
Dang.
Right.
Crazy.
And so out of that time, around 7,000 fans of video games from Japan voted, okay. And the game that they selected as their number one, Chrono Trigger.
Oh, well,
wait.
I agree.
Did you just fake us out real hard?
No.
No,
I definitely thought you were going to say that they picked the same game we did.
No, he was just saying they also voted on...
Oh, the way you set it up made it seem like they... Like, the way voted the same as us.
No, the way that I set it up makes it seem like they're like, all of Japan was like, I almost did an accent. NGP,
so terribly offensive.
They saw that NGP was hosting a retro gaming tournament and they were like, we should do the same.
As a country.
That's
come
fair.
On,
I'll
everyone.
See the connection.
And so they landed with Chrono Trigger. We landed with Link to the Past. Chrono Trigger didn't even make our Fateful Four.
Which is stupid.
So basically the nation of Japan is wrong.
Oh, yeah.
No, I think they're smarter than we are. So
well, yeah,
I agree
I mean,
with Chrono Trigger for sure. I'm very happy we chose A Link to the Past, but I get it.
You understand Japan?
I understand Japan as a country. I also understand Chrono Trigger as being one of the best of all time.
You might not agree with all three of their top three, though. Okay, so for number one, they did say Chrono Trigger,
this
which I think we could all understand, right?
Okay.
Number two, I think we could probably also agree on, and it wouldn't have fit in our tournament, but they said The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, easy. I didn't expect a modern one in there. Okay.
Right. Right, because we're so, our minds are so
sure,
retroized.
Their paradigm is different. Like, it's still totally valid.
But then for their third one, they picked, I'll probably mispronounce, but Nier Automata.
What?
Or
that's recent too.
Yeah, but also that one I feel like, okay, Chrono Trigger, yeah, I understand. Breath of the Wild, for sure, definitely get it. Nier?
Yeah,
what?
Weird,
like,
right?
How does that deserve to
since
be there?
Since the 80s, since 89.
Right.
I don't know about that
That's 30
one.
Years.
So 7,000 people, that's a lot of people too. Do they have like a list as well or?
So I don't know. So it was a reader survey opt-in vote for readers of Famitsu. Probably mispronounced that too, but it's I think the most popular video game magazine, longstanding video game magazine there in the country.
Damn.
And so they voted. There's probably more reader bias, but 7,000 is a good number to get
a
good percentage for the country of Japan.
Yeah, you're getting
within
accurate sense of
the 99% tile there, like literally with a like a, I saw someone actually do the math with like a 1.25% like error or something like that. Dang. Margin of error. But anyways, those are the three games.
I guess I should play near.
Understand. Yeah, I understand. So, well, I guess so. If they, because if we agree on the other two, might agree on near. I don't know. Though I do like our voting better because there was, we didn't have 7,000. I wish we would have had more, but we did have hundreds that voted in. Real, genuine people who voted from the heart about games they were deeply connected to. I feel like if you just kind of mix all the games up in the last 30 years, put them into the supercomputer to vote, you'll get disastrous results. Or you'll get, maybe not disastrous, but you'll get just these standard common Chrono Trigger, Breath of the Wild, Nier Automata. I mean, my thing is that people went out over supercomputers every single time.
Ooh, hoo, 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 boy. All like, right.
Like in our retro game of the week, I have no mouth and I must.
Overview.
The game this week is pretty unique for many reasons. The first. So this is not a first for us. This game, but it's still pretty unique in that it's not really done in the gaming industry in general. And the thing that I'm talking about is that this game, I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream, is a science fiction short story written by Harlan Ellison in 1967. We played...
And that's a first for us.
Okay, we have a short story?
Like, I don't know if we've played a video game based on a short story.
Not a short story, but you'll have to help me, both of you. Hitchhiker's Guide is the only one that we've played.
Ooh, yeah.
It was a novel.
Is literary, for sure.
See, it's interesting that you're going there. When you started saying that, I was like, yes, we played this genre of games before, but you haven't even gone there yet. So interesting. Right.
So it's a book, it's a short story. And around about 30 years later, it was adapted into a video game with the same name. It was released for PC, so this was a DOS game, in 1995. It was developed by the Dreamers Guild, it was published by Cyber Dreams and Acclaim, and a couple of others that aren't as important. But maybe more interesting, it was written and narrated by the author himself, Harlan Ellison.
Yeah, he had a big role to play in creating this game. Like, he was one of the designers, he voiced the supercomputer that we'll talk about soon, and
rewrote some of the story to fit into a game setting. So
maybe even added a character. I don't know. I haven't read the short story, although I should have. We're all into reading, all three of us. We should have read the short story this week.
Yeah, and this one's apparently very popular.
It's not super short, or I would have. I kind of looked into it because I was intrigued after seeing what the game was about. And it was just long enough that I didn't have a chance to sort of sneak it in. But I want to now. It seems intriguing. Although yeah. I kind of accidentally spoiled myself in playing through and reading right. topically. And so, I don't know, maybe I don't need to now.
So it's a point-and-click adventure. That's the genre of this game. And it's very sci-fi heavy. The plot is very important to this game because, like most point-and-click games, you are investing in a character or in a story, and it's slowly you're slowly uncovering the plot. So that's a big aspect. But I think it's really interesting that this was a book. So movies into games was more popular than adapting books into games.
Yeah, if anything, I feel like it happens more the opposite these days. Like a game IP will get popular, and then they'll make...
Oh yeah,
out of it, or then a series of books out of it, or whatever, like after the fact to just milk
right.
it.
And especially 30 years later with a fairly niche story, like I think people are either super fans of this short story or you have no idea about this at all. Either way, the plot is very weird and very heavy and very dark. That's another thing about this game that makes it pretty unique. So it's set up like this. There's a supercomputer named Am, refers to himself as Am because I think, therefore I am. So he's Am.
He says it in Latin in the game and it's very pretentious.
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure it's also in the book.
Yeah, oh, for sure. But he's like, you should know me. I am. And it's I am that I am, which is, I think, a biblical reference. But then he also takes it one step further right. to that, what you just said. Yeah,
silly. So am is the supercomputer that is actually made up of three supercomputers that one of them became self-aware, absorbed the other two, and then took over humanity. So the it was like post-Cold War, I think, and it was between US, Russia, and China. There was like a war, and so the computer killed off everyone except for five people, brought them down into the middle of the earth, I think, and has been torturing them for 109 years in their own individual chambers. Like, if this isn't weird, it gets weirder, but bear with me. And then allows each one of them to go on their own quest, their own adventure, and gives them some sort of hope. Like, hey, Gorister, one of the characters, you can finally kill yourself because you've been wanting to for 109 years. So he gets a right. chance to do so.
You just said adventure. It's like the adventure sounds like, oh, this is going to be fun, but right. that's far from
more like a horror, not even a survival, just a horror game, like just terrible things. And so I think this is where the rewriting came into play. So Ellison was like, they brought in some other writer and was like, hey, how can we adapt this to a game? Like, why did the computer choose these five people? And he was like, that's a great question. And so they like kind of wrote out a backstory for each one of these characters, Gorister, Benny, Ella, Nimdok, and Ted. And you as the player choose one of those characters and point and click your way through their adventure or horror.
Now, at the beginning, I thought you were going this direction. You went the sci-fi from a short story, which is awesome. It's a good thing to point out. But it's also not our first point-and-click title. We played
sure.
some point-and-click games before, like Scooby-Doo Mystery. Is that what it was called?
Something like that.
But then some more notable ones like Maniac Mansion, Myst. Yeah, so we played some before, and typically the UI is kind of clunky and the puzzles are kind of unintuitive, and we'll see if that remains the same here.
Yeah.
But like those games, this game is one of those point and click games, and so you've got a user interface thing down at the bottom that has the different items of what you're selecting and what you're able to do. And the top of the screen is what you're being able to watch. Like, it has the character that's being able to move around and interact, and you're clicking where they're able to go. So it's similar to those games in that kind of setup, but like Nolan has talked about, very different in the content. I mean, Scooby-Doo Mystery, very silly, funny, light.
Very this safe. Game,
although adventure is probably a part of the genre, man, this is... I would like to know what you guys think, if this is probably the most disturbing content mm-hmm. of a video game that we've played in the past 180 games.
It is. I think so, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Like enough so that I wondered, depending how heavy we were getting into content, whether we should like give people content warnings talking
That's
about some like really
fair.
Heavy topics.
I mean, we won't talk about specifics too much. And honestly, the author toned down the story quite a bit for the game.
Yeah, and it's 1985, and so the graphics don't allow it to be too gory or overt.
95.
But you're talking like some of the serious human trauma and atrocities and things that have ever happened to people are brought up in this game. And
yeah,
they kind of don't pull any punches. And what I found interesting is that, and some of this sort of matches tone of the original short story, but that the original game was intended to just be that, in that it was designed to kind of not even have a happy ending at all. As the game stands, as you play, depending on what you do with these different characters during their little, you know, sort of dramatic insights into their life story things that you get, you do have the ability to like eventually sort of defeat the computer and have one happy ending, but it's very, very hard to do. It wouldn't be easy to do. And like outside of a guide these days getting there, I don't think anybody would replay this game enough to ever find that on their own. But like originally wasn't even conceived of to have that out. It was just going to sort of be this story about these people and their despair. And I don't know, I guess finding some humanity within that. I'm not sure. I'm interested, and we'll get more into it, I'm sure. But you guys' take on sort of the messaging here and whether this game had any redemptive quality at all, or whether it was just sort of pointing out humanity's brokenness, or, you know, some of those themes are interesting to me.
So we won't get into tons of details. We continue on and go into the gameplay section. Won't get into some of the gory or some of the sensitive details, although it would have been, it would have gotten the attention of our listeners if we would have had a disclaimer up front. So we should think about that for next time.
Gameplay.
So from the start, I started to get into it a little bit, but I think it's one of the key gameplay factors in this kind of game that I wanted to bring out just from the beginning. I think that I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream has a much better user interface than most of the other point-and-click adventure games that we've played. True or false?
True.
I would have said true right away, except as you were listing...
So false?
Like, user interface things, you did include Myst, which is different and unique and was well done, but different. Most point-and-clicks that are, like, 2D point-and-clicks are pretty terrible, and this one was okay.
But I think it's super clear. Like, we've played even, I don't know if it was a point-and-click or is a type-and-click, but we've played games where you have to type out some commands.
That actually was Hitchhiker's, funny enough.
That was for sure Hitchhiker. I feel like we may have done one other, but those are more difficult because you don't have much of a guide. But even in Hitchhiker, you could click on, like, walk to or different things like this.
Yeah.
But the commands here were clear and relatively limited. We've talked about in other games how pretty much you have to use everything. Use door, use swing, use mailbox, use like chicken, you know, like there, you have to use everything. In this, you do have to use some, but you've got some other clarifying like commands to push. So the commands that you have in this game, they're big buttons, but it's walk to, look at, take, use, talk to, swallow, give, and push. So those are the only commands that you can work with. And I think for the most part, all of those make sense as I was going through this game.
I think they make sense too. And another thing that helps with that is that you can like hover your cursor over that top part of the screen where you're seeing the environment, and things that are worth doing something to or with will have a name. So like, instead of just guessing like this looks like something I should mess with, it like kind of confirms it for you by like, if you hover over a sarcophagus, it'll say something like, this is a sarcophagus, instead of just like nothing. And then that narrows down like a ton of the grind of this genre for me, because y'all know I don't, and I think, I don't know if y'all do either, most people probably don't care for this genre anymore. So not having to do that research and just use the very intuitive use command on something gave me some sort of text that was like, I can't do that. Or, oh yeah, sure, I just did something important. So I do agree with you. I think it's one of the better interfaces.
For me, there wasn't as much like hunt for the pixel as you get in some of these games. Yes. And I don't like that, where I'm just literally trying to go over every pixel on the screen with my mouse until something lights up or until something. I think for the most part, even the scenery things were chunks. So I knew if something was substantial enough to be able to interact with. There's only a couple of times where I had to do some searching, and
right,
a couple is much more palatable for me than almost every single thing having to find an item and then having to like use it with some other item to just create this weird concoction. For the most part, it stays away from that.
Yeah,
but it stays away from that a lot, almost to the point that this one feels more like an adventure game sort of story that they were trying to tell, that they chose to do a point and click on because that was sort of the technology that kind of fit it, than a typical point-and-click game. And here's what I mean. I don't feel like the normal point-and-click things that are at least appealing to me a little bit about the genre. I agree, Nolan, it's not my favorite genre either. But finding some of those unique puzzles and having that light bulb moment of like, oh yeah, that item I saw down there could interact with this in this interesting way, and then you realize it does, and you feel accomplishment because it's like, it's puzzle solving. I don't feel like I got nearly as much of that with this game. There's a little bit of like figuring things out, but it's more of a like, are the choices you're making in interacting with people and in dialogue, and it's, I guess the plot's more pushed by like ethical choices you're making within this weird, you know, like framework of these stories than it is by puzzle solving. And to me, that kind of just doesn't fit with the, I don't know, with what it's trying to do.
Yeah, but you're smarter than me, Kenny. So like, you miss being like, oh, this weird tweezer, maybe it'll work with this golden chalice I found. My brain doesn't go there. I'm like, what in the world? And it's a guessing game. So when I play these games, I'm literally just clicking on items, hoping they work. And I've played some of these point-and-click games where I use an item and it's gone and I needed it for something else. Like, that's ridiculous to me where you... So this game being very straightforward for the most part, there was some guessing involved, but like, I'm with Dustin. I thought this one actually worked for people who maybe get frustrated with this genre more often.
You did a first play this week.
I did.
So it's up on YouTube. You can check that out. Nolan's first experience with the game. And you did remarkably well. It was pretty amazing watching you. Again, I give it a testament, one, to you, that your brain does kind of work that way with some of these games. At least this one, you're moving pretty smoothly through. And I had the leisure of looking at a guide as you're doing it, and pretty much you were walking through it, which was super nice, but very clearly you were not using a guide. I give that part to you because, again, you're good at games and you've grown in that. But with the point and click and finding those things and using logic. But two, I give it to the game for setting it up in a way that there's enough vocal cues like from and text cues from your character that's responding and reacting to what you're clicking on. The supercomputer is talking back to you, so there's a few clues there. You just trying things. And for the most part, I think there are a few, and I hate that, but I think there are a few like hard traps or like dead ends. That's what I meant. Dead ends that you can fall into and get stuck where you have to reload something. But I think they're few and far in between, and they're not the easiest to step into. And we played a game before, and I don't even remember which one it was, but one of the solutions I just remember was you had to do something to an envelope and then put it in a microwave, and the letter out, and then you pulled out it's completely random. Unintuitive. And in most of these characters' stories, it's fairly, I don't know about straightforward, but at least it's a lot more intuitive than a lot of these games become.
You know what it is? It's the writing. I realized that when I was playing this game. So an author wrote the story, the text, the conversations.
So that it's logical and makes sense.
So it's logical. It like writers, you can tell someone who is a writer and is good at writing and building out sentences even and just stories. And then just like a game designer or team that was just like, yeah, we need text here. So that for me helped so much. And at first I was like, yo, this intro is mad long. I can't put this in the first play. It took me like 20 minutes to get through his opening monologue. But I appreciate it. Yeah, but it was very well done.
Hate.
He was like screaming, Nimdok!
Right. I agree that the writing is quality and that you can tell. And I really am glad that Harlan Ellison was a part of not just the writing of the short story, but of, you know, the rework for this video game. But some of it was cheesy. I mean, like an over the top and melodramatic, and especially with the voice acting. I don't think the voice acting was necessarily bad, but you know, with that hate speech, with some of the other things, it's like, all right, I get it already.
Yeah.
He's more of an author than a voice actor for sure. I'll leave it there because I'm with you. Like it wasn't.
I think it needed it though.
I don't know. It wasn't great.
Yeah, no, I think it works and maybe provides a little bit of levity so it's not just so dark and depressing. Sure. Let's just talk about a couple of the stories. We talked about that there's these five different characters that you can play through their stories, and after you play through all five, you come to that conclusion. I was able to get through three this week. Out of the ones that you did get some experience with, what was one of the stories that maybe stood out to you? We won't be able to go through all of them, but just wanted to highlight one or two.
So in my first play, I played Ellen's story. Ellen is the only female character. And Ellen's backstory deals with some of the heavier things about this game.
And you don't know a lot about it at first because she just hates the color yellow. That's
yes.
And how she's being tortured for the 109 years is in this like small box with this closing door over and over again.
It's a yellow box. And it's a closing door, opening, close, open, close. You find out, spoiler alert, by the way, if you were planning on playing this game.
And don't give it all since it's a more sensitive.
Right. She was attacked in an elevator, a yellow, and he was like wearing yellow. The elevator was yellow. So like the whole time I'm playing the game, she's like, I can't touch this. I'm terrified. At one point I had to put a blindfold on so I can like pick up this yellow item. And it's because she's having like, she's traumatized from that experience. And so like, and she's been tortured. So the uncovering some of the little elements here and there was actually pretty smart, even though it was extremely sad and extremely heavy. You start to uncover some of like Ellen's backstory. So that's the only one I played all the way through, though. I did watch Gorison. What's his name?
Gorister, that's what it is. Ellen was one of my favorites too. That was the first one that I started with simply because, only female character. And I thought it was good too. But I'll reserve mine since I've probably played a couple more. Kenny, was there one that stood out to you?
I mean, so just because heavy and we've been talking heavy topics, Nimdok.
The is, German?
Yeah, is this... I don't think they ever like overtly say Nazi because...
What? Well, they don't use the word, but
right? They don't use the word, and the like symbolism is all kind of changed. But he's clearly like one of the Nazi physicians that did like terrible medical experiments on people.
Well, and it's not even that it may be. Of course, they didn't say it probably for certain reasons. But in his story, like you even work alongside of another character from real history that is known to have done some
known to be some of the most atrocious
heinous experiments
medical war crime kind of things, and you come to then find out, again, some spoiler alerts, that your character is Jewish, or the game's version of
the
Jewish.
Lost tribe, part of the Lost tribe,
exactly. And and anyhow, so that one was crazy, super heavy, and obviously dealing with some of the like medical stuff and these patients that are in various states of the process of being, you know, tortured and mutilated and all these just terrible, terrible, heinous things is sort of what he's going through. And so though you get trauma sort of in all their stories, that one was just so like over the top. Like, what do you put in when you want to truly represent evil in a really overt kind of way? That I thought it was worth pointing out. Like, almost, it's almost a trope to, like, drop Nazis as the ultimate evil, but everything else in this game was heavy and done sort of reasonably enough that this one didn't feel cheesy. It just felt depressing.
And then one of the stories that I that stood out to me, the third one that I did, was this kind of ape-like character. The only one that, like, wasn't full human. I think his features had been completely marred. I didn't really catch completely. His name's Benny, which is just silly, because the computer does shout out at him at one time. He's like, Benny! And it's due to his name, it wasn't that traumatizing or scary. But Benny's story took place actually a long time before, or at least part of his story here takes place a long time before civilization. It's this ancient tribe and they don't speak English. Benny can't even speak, I don't think. So he has to use like motions and sounds and noises. Anyways, this tribe once a week or something sacrifices one of their members to Am, this great computer god. And Benny is tasked with like facing his past of being this demanding military officer who ends up being responsible for his unit all dying. And he has to face that while rescuing a kid in the tribe. And anyways, just this unique story there set in a different kind of setting in these caves. And that's one of the things that I found interesting with this game is that it's not just the same kind of quote unquote puzzle with each of these characters. I truly felt that with each of these different stories, you have different types of puzzles.
Yeah, I'd agree. I still don't feel like it was like puzzle heavy. I felt like it was story heavier than anything else, but you could make wrong choices and your characters could pay the cost for that. And so like you definitely still had to save often and be thinking about what you were doing.
Well, see, and I think in some of the stories it is puzzle heavy. I thought Ellen's story was fairly puzzle heavy. You're having to find this item, connect it to this item, do something with this item. But then, for example, Benny's story, you barely had any items at all, and it was all dialogue-based kind of puzzle. And so I would say that they're all in somewhat puzzles, but on different ones, you're having to do it in different ways, and I thought that was super interesting.
And that's something about this game that helped me realize. It gave me more insight to why I don't care for the point-and-click genre. Most games, I think, are too open-ended. And I like the linear progression of most games, actually. And so when I have to go to 30 different rooms, collect a ton of items, and then sit there until I understand what to do or not understand, that's what really just turns me completely off. So, yeah, Ellen's was more puzzle-heavy than Benny's. Gorister's was even more puzzle heavy than Ellen's. So, however, it's still fairly linear in that you find a new item, you're going to use that item very soon. Next room, same room, something in your inventory. So it definitely helped me stay more interested and engaged.
Aged. One of the things we often talk about in point and clicks is just how sort of archaic it feels as a game style in general, partly because they sort of only work on mouse and PC, and you know, games sort of have moved to a more generic user interface these days that, you know, is cross-platform, but partly just because it's sort of one item at a time and one movement at a time, and there's something dated to me about point and click just sort of as a genre at all. Did that mess you guys up? Did that break immersion? Did it ruin the storytelling for you? Or do you think it works as a sort of mode of rehashing this story in a computer game?
Point and click's just not a thing anymore. Like, I feel like this game in our age, modern gaming, should be VR. And that's the only kind of game I'll tell you I support VR for, because I don't really care about VR. However,
I mean, I think about some of those like puzzle based phone games where you have to find a certain thing on the screen and then move it or touch it or interact with it in a certain way as being the kind of modern equivalent of these old point and clicks. They don't tend to be story heavy anymore, but I think they're still around in some format.
Maybe, but I feel like I will die on the hill that stories like this need to be read and imagined instead of portrayed in a movie or in a video game, because one, point and click stupid, and two, your mind is always going to come up with something more twisted and dark than like CGI in a movie or a video game can like cheesily try to feed you. So like, I feel like this short story is probably brilliant and very scary and twisted.
And
but
you felt like you didn't get any of that here?
And content wise, yes, I did, because it's in the writing, it's in the
and
story.
You thought the medium was more of a deterrent rather than
the medium causes it to be poor. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if I completely agree that point and click is stupid and that it's completely I think it's got its place. I would probably say with edutainment games or educational games, I think point and click could work great.
I'll support that, yeah.
But I do think that with, for the most part, by and large, this adventure kind of video game with point and click did die out mid-90s, late 90s, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. I don't know the full reasoning why, outside of I think more and more people were wanting to have some kind of freedom in how they played games. And this, more than any other, really pigeonholes you to play and do not a few things that could work, but one specific things. And sometimes if we don't think the exact same way as the developer or, you know, or the creator or the writer in this case, then we're going to miss it. And so I think that's what made it difficult for a lot of people to enjoy, and it makes it not have as much of a mass appeal, which makes people not put in the investment to make these kinds of games anymore. That's my theory.
Now, in terms of medium, I think that it kind of deters from what the author, what the original intention of the story would be. But I, from my perspective, this is a first for us in that this, I don't know if y'all know, this game was a major flop when it was released. And probably for obvious reasons, it was super dark, very serious. This was the 90s, and that was not happening in the 90s. Parents shut this down so fast. Like, it's crazy to me that this kind of stuff is acceptable in book form, or no one really cares in book form. But then if it's a game, it becomes terrible. America is terrible, going to hell in a handbasket. So now, though, in our time, I feel like if a game like this came out, it would be well received and praised for tackling real life topics and like trying to address them. And so it would be completely different than the 90s. And there are games like this coming out in the indie space, I feel like.
I would say I agree, except on one thing, and I think it would completely flop it the other way. And it's because it seemed as though all of the stories have a character flaw that these characters are needing to come come face to face with, except the one female, Ellen's, who seemingly she just had an attitude, but that was much smaller in comparison to the rest. And her situation happened to her, yet she was here being tortured.
You're
so
right.
If they tweaked a few things there, I think it would work. But if not, it'd be a complete backfire today.
Yeah, I'm just meaning like it, not even this game necessarily, just a game that takes on something in the right way, not in, and like actually the book, there's even more questionable things about Ellen that's like, really? Like, wait, what are you trying to say here? I'm just meaning like more serious, not afraid to go there type of games, I think now are more okay than they were back then. So like that's a very interesting aging aspect of this game that I don't think we've seen on the podcast yet.
We also, during our age section, usually talk about graphics, music, sound, different things like that. And my opinion is that everything holds up to the test of time, although none of the individual qualities are just like great or groundbreaking. Do you know what I mean?
Yes,
like,
I do.
I think voice acting holds up, but I think it's often cheesy or melodramatic. Graphics stand the test of time for the type of game that it is, but it isn't just extraordinary or like, wow, that's beautiful. But I do think the best aging thing out there is the user interface, is the way that it's handled. I just thought it's above and beyond anything else that I've seen in any kind of point and click adventure game before.
Yeah. I think it was executed fine. Like I said earlier, stuff like this where it's a weird story already, it's best in book form because your imagination's better than some weird random tree thing that Benny interacts with. Like that just ends up looking kind of cheesy. But like in terms of did they execute it well? Yeah, it looks fine. But again, it's a point and click. I'm not. Yeah.
My understanding is that they actually went back and upgraded some of the technology they were originally planning on using to be kind of higher clarity and higher resolution than sort of the initial engine they were going to build it on, specifically to try and get it a little bit more immersive. And again, this is mid-90s, so it's not like you had stellar stuff coming out, but it definitely, it's always clear what's going on. It communicates what the story's trying to do in terms of, you know, characters, all the different worlds that each of these five characters are in are vastly different, and the art styles sort of change with those differences in really good ways. And so I think Dustin pretty much nailed it. It was, I think, probably pretty good at all of those things for its time, but a few of them didn't future-proof well, but they were solid enough that it's not like playing them as a distraction today. And that to me is the big piece, is if we play old stuff that was done so poorly that we can't get over the hurdle of it, then it's a problem. But here, I think you can get through the story and figure out what's going on with all the characters and be okay with the music and the sound and all of that. And so I think you nailed it, Dustin, in your description.
Well, thank you, Kenny. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
This game is super easy to get your hands on today. You can get it from GOG, or you can get it from Steam, or you can get it as an app on your phone. So it came out for Android. I don't know if it came out for your Apple phones, though.
No,
but
I think it's also on iOS. I'm not certain.
Okay. Well, either way, I think you're right, actually. It's completely available. So if any of this sounded interesting and you're above 18 years old, then go and find a copy of I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream if you want to. But first, you need to stick around because you're going to find out if we give this game our vote for New Game Plus status.
Final thoughts.
At the end of each and every one of our episodes, we do submit our votes whether or not this game receives New Game Plus status. It's our general thumbs up or thumbs down. Requires 2/3 of the vote to swing one way or the other. Man, I'm going to go last because I really think that I'm still formulating my opinions here.
Ooh, okay. I'll go first. No, I don't. I think point and click's not a fun kind of game to play in 2019. It's easy to get your hands on, yes. So it's no longer abandonware. It's a PC game you can still play. So if that's your thing, maybe. But because of how they executed this already existing story, I would just rather you go read the book. I haven't read it, or the short story. I haven't read it, so I also can't recommend that. But this just seems like a strange translation to me. So no New Game Plus.
Kenny, before you go, question Nolan, would there be any point and click game that you would give your vote?
I feel like I've given it to one of them, maybe Myst. It would take a lot, I think.
Okay.
It would need to be fun. I haven't really enjoyed them, so probably maybe a Zelda. I don't know.
Okay. Kenny, you can go ahead. You're not going to, but go ahead.
It's a fair commentary. I definitely like some of the things about this game, I think, better than Nolan did, at least at a first glance. I don't know, he didn't go way deep, but I love the idea of trying to translate a cool literary kind of work into a neat story on screen. I do feel like that's easier to do today than it used to be. We've gotten a lot better at setting, you know, tone and mood and ambiance. I give them a lot of respect for trying to tackle some of these heavy topics and not, you know, like acting like humanity's just one big glowing, you know, hero, but that there's some broken things that go on and that are rough, and that you have characters that have a chance to sort of at least partially redeem themselves in this story. It's never like fully happy or really positive, but there's, I don't know, there's this underlying sort of thread of hope, and maybe it's just because I'm an optimist, or maybe it's because they changed the game to have at least one positive outcome that I get that. But even without it, I feel like this sort of railing against what they've done and what this computer is kind of a cool theme. I like all of those things. I'm kind of in Nolan's camp, though. Ultimately, even with really good intentions and using the best tools they had at the time, it's hard for this one to forward translate just because of the genre. And I'm not as opposed. I also am not a huge fan, but it didn't do the point and clicky stuff in a way that felt rewarding on its own. And the story stuff could have been done better outside of a point and click. And so I feel like they sort of just told the story they wanted with the technology they had and didn't think more about how to go over that. And it's sort of a fundamental problem for me. So ultimately, no New Game Plus here from me either.
Well, Dustin, you're up.
Well, I mean, I'm going to give it my vote. I was okay. on edge. I really didn't know coming in. And that happens to me every once in a while, that I'm not sure as I'm coming into the recording. But the more that I've talked about it, the more that I've realized personally that it's far from a perfect game, but it is one of the better point-and-click adventure games, in my opinion. None of the mechanical side of things hindered me this week, and that's typically what I have to strive to overcome in this genre.
Yeah, that's big, because that's hard to do with the branching nature of these games.
For sure.
It's really hard to do. And they did have some dead ends and some bugs, but I don't think nearly as many as some games do.
And you know that I enjoy story, and this game had it. The characters is there too, but the story, it really made me want to read the book. And I think that if a video game can accomplish that, Not like, this game's terrible, I'm going to put it away and go read any book, but this game's good enough that I'm interested in the story enough that I want to go read the book, then I think it's succeeded. So I do give the game my vote for New Game Plus status. Unfortunately, it requires 2/3 of the vote, and so I have no mouth and I must scream.
Ooh.
Is not New Game Plus certified.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, I have no mouth and I must scream. I thought you were going somewhere with being the only person or something. Never mind.
No, I'm not creative.
Me neither.
A few of you wrote in to let us know your thoughts on the retro game of the week. Daniel said, I love the original story, and I'm so glad that the game came out as well. The inclusion of a story that doesn't focus on a single mistake or character flaw seems to be more of the attempt to show Am's single-minded hatred for all of humanity without any mercy, even for the innocent. That, in my opinion, is terrifying because I've seen that depth of hate in some humans, and it makes Am even more human because his reason for hate is actually understandable. To know everything and never truly feel any of it, that is a fate worse than death. It pisses me off that it was censored in Germany. I get that they don't feel great about World War II, but banning its content doesn't change history. I love the game. Rest in peace, Harlan Ellison, 1934 to 2018.
Oh, dang, recent. That got deep. That was probably the deepest commentary we've had on the show.
There are two main things there, and both of them, yeah, were not like, yeah, they're like, okay, well, we can't really comment on that, I feel
so
like.
So AI is going to be a thing, whether we like it or not, in our lifetime. And part of me is kind of nervous about it. I don't know if we'll see it, like, it's not going to be like take over the world, but... It's, I don't know, science fiction is becoming more and more real, which is an interesting thing.
Science fiction is just the future today.
Dustin, you may be the cheesiest person I've ever met in my life.
No, Am is hate, hate, horoscopes.
Hate, hate.
Rykon also wrote in and said, something about this game breaks my heart. Dialogue was quality in parts, but canned... repetitious catchphrases were tough to listen to and sometimes went against the sequence of events, thereby breaking immersion. Subject matter is interesting and unique, but the execution of creating a quality adventure game fell short. I didn't play as much as I wanted to, but sadly didn't truly engage with the amount that I did play. Can't say that it's New Game Plus for me.
I find it hard to get into immersion at all with this game. With any game like this.
So, with any game or any game like this?
Like this. Okay. Like, and it makes sense. You're just looking at a still picture. So, I don't know. Maybe I'm flawed. I'm not like Am.
Am would torture you for 109 years. I promise you that.
By playing a point and click, yeah.
Thank you, Daniel. Thank you, Rykon, for writing in. You can always send in your thoughts and commentary on the Retro Game of the Week to ngppodcast@gmail.com in our Discord channel of commentary or by going to our website, ngppodcast.com. And there you can send in your thoughts. We would love to include them as a part of our episode each and every week. But for now, we're going to put aside I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream, and we are going to randomly select the next game that we're going to be playing for the next 7 days from our Retro Master List. I usually tell you to send in games, but stop. I'm having to add so many, like weekly, just dozens.
Our list has become really, really big.
I'm working on an app that will allow them to submit and it will auto-add. So.
Yes. Well, Coconut Wizard, I'm looking at you. I feel like you add a dozen a day.
Call
and
out.
Just take a nice little break for a little bit. I appreciate you. Randomly selecting now. The game that we're going to be playing for the next 7 days was almost simultaneously released for the PC, the Nintendo 64, and the PlayStation in the year 1999.
Sounds like a big title so far.
It is a racing video game.
Never mind.
There are some big racing games.
Set in the fictional Legoland universe, this single-player racing game is called Lego Racers.
Yeah. All right.
I mean, I like Legos, and I like video games. Maybe
but that doesn't... mean, no, wait, actually, like here's the fast. Thing.
Doesn't my Lego put some pretty good games out?
Yeah, my friend Nick, your friend Nick, our friend Nick, loves the Lego games, like the Lego Batman, but this was early, so I don't know. And racing sucks, so.
Well, maybe it will be a Mario Kart. Maybe it will be a
Vigilante 8.
Good race. No, that's combat. Anyways, find a copy of Lego Racers this week. We'll be playing it on Nintendo 64. How about that?
Sure, we'll take it.
So play along with us, Lego Racers.
Do you hate Skype?
That's,
I'm just kidding.
It is getting better, but it's still terrible. So.
We have a Discord server that we'd love for you to join us in if you don't hate us yet. Go to ngppodcast.com and click on join our Discord server. It's that easy, folks.
The flip side of the coin, here's some people that we love, love, love. Mm-mm. All of our producer level supporters on patreon.com. Bill, Dear Baby, Grim, Zach, and of course Zion. You guys are all the best. And a big shout out to a new patron who's decided to join us this month as well. Dustin may have given you flack, but I will give you props. Thanks for your support, Coconut Wizard.
Thanks, but stop submitting games.
Thank you. I appreciate you. Welcome and stop. You can always check us out on our social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Twitch at NGP Podcast. You could look us up on YouTube for regular Let's Plays and video content at New Game Plus Podcast. You can find all those links on our website at ngppodcast.com. Listen to us directly on any podcast provider of your choice. Make sure you subscribe so that you are the first to get new NGP episodes. And while you're at it, leave a kind rating and review. This episode was edited and produced by our good friend Tom Tate. Join us next week as we play Lego Racers. Until then, I'm still Dustin.
I'm Kenny.
I'm Nolan.
You want to do anything, Nolan?
Yeah, I do. I'm playing Sekiro right now. And my name's
Nolan.
That's
what you want to talk about? Yeah. And this has been New Game Plus.